This podcast may contain content that is not suitable for listeners under the age of 18. If you are 17 or younger and wish to educate yourself about sex and relationships, you should visit scarleteen.com. That's scarleteen with one T.
Hey, I'm Alicia, your non-monogamous relationship coach. Welcome to the podcast where my friends and I chat about our relationships, enthusiastic non-monogamy, polyamory, swinging, kink, and our lives. You'll get a candid peek into what makes it worth it to live life outside the box. And in case you're still wondering, nope, we're not monogamous. Hello, hello, hello. Today I am chatting with someone who has two long-term partners, 13 years and 6 years. And her name is Sarah Sohn, and she's a pelvic floor therapist, a sex counselor, a mentor for leaders who work in a lot of taboo areas. And we're chatting about a bunch of her experiences, some of mine too. But some of the topics that we're covering today is like what it was like coming out to family and friends as polyamorous, and how can people in a polyamorous relationship or polyamorous relationship structure handle breakups of their partners, and how to deal with metamor relationships, and what are the assumptions around polyamory regarding masculinity and sexuality. It's juicy. It's so good. I hope you enjoy it. And if you would like to hear our behind the scenes content, which there'll be a little teaser of later, go to our Patreon, patreon.com/notmonogamous, and check it out. Enjoy. There we go. Now we're recording. So I want to welcome you to Nope, We're Not Monogamous. And why don't we start? I would love, how about I ask you to just give like a quick little brief introduction of yourself.
Just sure.
Who you are. Who are you?
Hi, well, I'm so glad to be here and thank you for inviting me. So yeah, I'd love to give you a little lens of who I am and kind of like how I see the world. I think that's always important when you're talking about topics like sex or non-monogamy or more controversial topics. So I'm Sarah. I'm a pelvic floor physical therapist and a sex counselor. So I both live in this world and I also help people in this world. And I, grew up in a traditional family household. You know, my parents did get divorced kind of when I was in high school. I identify as pansexual and attracted to many different genders. I identify as a kinky person. That's actually was my introduction into polyamory to begin with. I grew up with Jewish roots and in a bigger body. So that was, I've lost 100 pounds about 3 times. So that's really does shape a lot of the way that I see people seeing choices that were different and being being okay with being maybe not as traditional because of some of those experiences. It definitely shapes my view of the world and overall try to be a good human being.
Yeah. So glad you're here. Thank you. There's so much good stuff just right there. So let me ask you, first, I want to ask to give us a baseline is, what kind of relationship structure do you, identify with currently?
Yeah. So I have been in a relationship with someone for almost 13 years and another person for almost 6 years. So we didn't go into it being like, we are polyamorous and the kitchen table poly. And like, we were just like, this makes sense and it felt good. So, but that would be the words that I would use now, would be polyamorous and kitchen table poly. So we don't live together, but we are about a mile away. And both of and our partners have dated other people, if that makes sense. So it's like a V, mm-hmm. right? So I'm in a relationship with one person and relationship with another person. And both of those people have been in other relationships. My partner, I can use his name. My partner, Joseph, is married, and they have a kid together that I've known since he was 1 year old. And I miss Sarah, and I love this kid to death. And so that would definitely be part of our little family, and my dog that we all love too.
So, what kind of dog do you have?
A border collie.
Oh,
she's smart and amazing. But if anybody's ever had a border collie, they're a lot because they're really smart. I love her.
I have a really smart dog. It's a good thing and a bad thing. I have a 1-year-old German Shepherd who is insane and really smart.
Yeah. And it's similar breed in the fact that, like, if you don't start using their brain, you can tell they start like spinning and chasing their own tail or doing something a little bit. It's not even just exercise. They need you to use their brain.
Yep. They need jobs. Otherwise, it's game over. You're like, where did my smart dog go?
Yeah, our baby was a COVID dog. So I love her.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. So polyamorous, kitchen table poly. Has your longer relationship always been non-monogamous, or did you have like a transition?
No. So we met when I was 18 years old. I'm 30 now, 31 now. And oops. And so we were each other's first partners, and we met on OkCupid before that was cool. Like before people were on, like, there were like Tinder didn't exist. Apps didn't exist. It was just like, at the time where you weren't really telling people that you were meeting online. And a lot of the questions, if you've ever used OkCupid, it has algorithms. It's a really unique app where it will ask questions. And a lot of them are about monogamy and about politics.
Yeah.
And we had a 98% match. So it was a discussion from the beginning that was very casual. Like, our view of relationships was similar and our view of monogamy was similar, but it wasn't something that either of us acted on because we were just new to relationships, period. Right. It didn't feel like we just wanted to get to know each other and be in a relationship together. So throughout college, you know, we were monogamous, you know, just with each other. And then I went to graduate school. And then when I was away in graduate school, we were long distance for a few years. And for a few different reasons, some of, you know, partly growing up, some thinking, well, this was our only option. And some issues that we were having in our relationship, we decided to break up for a year. So when we broke up, I was, you know, excited. I had never dated. I never used Tinder. At this time, I was very excited to use. I was like, well, what is this? You know, what's this online dating world? So I went on all these dates. Yeah. And I just had a lot of terrible dates and terrible sex. And then I remember talking to him and being like, this is terrible. Like, this is not, this is not what I wanted to experience. I just wanted to like have some different new experiences. And he's like, well, maybe we don't have to break up for that. Like, maybe why don't we consider meeting some people that are poly, or at this time it was kind of coinciding with the kink world. Why don't we, you know, look into just meeting people that have alternative lifestyles and see what that's like, and maybe, you know, give, like, just see, you know, because we didn't really even know that was an option.
Right.
So we started exploring. It really did start in the kink world. And as soon as we met people that just normalized being themselves and being in non-monogamous relationships, we both realized, oh, this is an option and this feels good. Like, this feels like people we like to be around. This feels like what would work really well for us for a variety of reasons. And we both started to date. Very, like, about 2 years after that, I ended up meeting Joseph. He's my other partner. And we've been together since, so about 7 years. I have dated a little bit outside of those relationships, but those have been my main relationships and, you know, since ever, actually. So, yeah, it's been nice.
We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Alicia here. You know, the voice you've been tuning into episode after episode. Today, I'm popping in with an invitation that's really close to my heart. Behind the scenes, I've been crafting something special just for you, my dedicated listeners. If there's a voice inside you that's seeking guidance on navigating the realms of relationships and non-monogamy, wanting to like boost your confidence and find that unwavering sense of security, or you're struggling to manage the tricky waters of jealousy, I'm here to offer my support. I've cleared my schedule to open up 50 slots this month for free one-on-one clarity chats directly with me. So this is your opportunity to dive deep into those pressing questions and come out on the other side with newfound clarity and direction. The availability on this is super limited and these spots are going to fill up really fast. So don't miss your chance to connect with me. Head over to my website, aliciapayne.com, right now. Go secure your spot, because together we can uncover a path to a more joyful, fulfilling, and easy non-monogamous journey. Talk to you soon.
I love that so much. So many people have, you know, go through so many struggles in like opening up a relationship or just dating. And I mean, it's like, I don't know, it can be kind of a crapshoot. It's so awesome to like find good people and keep them.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that I didn't have words for this at the time. Now I do, but I'm definitely very demisexual in that I enjoy the romantic side. I really enjoy getting to know somebody. I really enjoy like the intellectual conversations. And I did go on a lot of bad dates. I don't like painting things as good or bad, but just a lot of dates where polyamory really wasn't understood. And that definitely wasn't like, it was an interesting transition. Now when I'm dating, it's much easier to explain things or to have boundaries for certain things. But at the time it was different. I remember even when I met my partner, Joseph, him and his wife were non-monogamous, but they also didn't have experience with non-monogamy. Mm-hmm. And I remember he sent me a message. It was like, we can hang out on Friday nights after 10. It was like the most random times. It was like, in my mind, I was like, this person might be cheating. So not consensually monogamous. So I was very adamant that I wanted to meet his wife, like this whole blah, 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 blah. And it ended up working out fine. He was just nervous. He just didn't know how to do these things. And that was, you know, all of that. But I remember at first, it was like, this does not feel, what do you mean you can only hang out Fridays after 10 p.m.?
Bennett?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, that's not going to be a time I'm going to be spending with you.
I will be with my book. Thank you very much.
But now we have a really wonderful relationship. And it's so nice. You know, we've shared with family for the most part. There are a few people that we still haven't spoken much with, but all of our family knows. When I had surgery this year, both of my partners were there the whole time in the hospital and talking and communicating with my dad, which was different. Mm-hmm. I'm friends with, I never thought this would happen, but my metamour, so my partner's wife's mom, yeah. And I are friends. And we hung out for Thanksgiving and for Christmas, and it's really nice. So didn't start that way, but we all made gingerbread houses together with both of the grandparents on their side. It's nice.
God, that's wonderful. I think a lot of people have a desire for something like that. How was coming out to family and friends? Yeah.
Well, friends was easy. You know, they just made jokes that maybe I didn't always appreciate. Like they would say, they don't look anything alike in my in my perspective, my partners, they're like literally the opposites. They're so different of human beings. But my roommates from college would say Bobby one and Bobby two because they thought it was funny. so like there would be some teasing, but all my friends were very accepting. And As soon as you see us interact and see how much we all love each other, it just makes sense. And family was difficult, but also easier than I anticipated. I think as soon as they saw, you know, we went out, the person I was most nervous about was my dad. And we went out for lunch, me, my dad, and my partners. And my nesting partner, the person I live with, basically reassured my dad that he wasn't going anywhere, that this was something he wanted to, everything was okay. And that seemed to change. You know, he still likes to, he just started saying, instead of saying, how's your friend? He's like, how's, and he'll say his name, which is nice.
How's your friend doing?
Yeah. But I think once he saw how much he loved me and how much we're all getting along, it's just, he's not, it's different for him because in his mind, it was difficult for him to understand the difference between someone being unhappy in their relationship and swinging and all of these things and polyamory and just didn't understand. But now he's like, I don't have to understand or prove, but I like this person and that's okay.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's so good. A lot of my clients ask me questions about like coming out and, you know, like that's kind of one of the big fears, like essentially what if I lose all the people in my life or, you know, everybody gets mad at me for doing this thing they don't understand. And
they're already ultimately mad.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Everyone's already mad. They're already pissed. They're already not approving. They're not approving of you because they just don't know that thing yet, but they're still not approving. You know, you're still carrying it around. That's how they feel.
Yeah.
So I was the same way. I was really scared, not really about rejection, but it was more of hurting that person, you know, of not wanting to see someone hurt because of my own choices and them feeling like they somehow made a mistake or, you know, but the more that I celebrated it and the more that I was allowing of all the emotions that they had, you know, because it wasn't just like black and white, I'm so happy. The more that I just allowed them to kind of go through things, the easier it was. And it's been nice. Not perfect. You know, there's still some people that the thing that comes up a lot, honestly, is masculinity, which I did not expect to be a thing. But the problems that have been the things I have found the hardest, because whatever reason, people are most interested in that, has been things I really didn't expect. So one would be masculinity. People will judge someone's masculinity. Oh, he lets you have multiple partners. There's an assumption that something must be really wrong with your nesting partner or the sex must be not great. You know, there's an assumption there to do with masculinity that isn't fun. That like, that's always my fear is I don't want someone to judge my relationships, obviously. And the other one that I never thought of was seeing one of my partners was in a relationship for a year, actually twice, and was really heartbroken after a breakup. And didn't realize that was going to be something that was so hard because people change a little bit when they go through a breakup, some for the good, some for not. And also your metamorph becomes my idea of in my world, I love the whole metamorph thing. So that was also a learning curve for me. I had to learn that not everyone wants that, right? Like I'm like, let's be best friends. And they're like, hi, who is this person? So don't do that if you're new to poly. My recommendation is just to have an open gateway so that everyone's on the same team and there's open communication and to allow a relationship if it grows into a friendship, but be okay if it doesn't. It's just a recommendation, but I was really excited.
Solid
about
recommendation.
It. Yeah. And so we became friends and that was hard too, because it was like losing a friend and not really liking the way that they treated my partner. And that whole thing was difficult, much more difficult than I probably would have anticipated if someone had asked me what's going to be hard about this. That's probably not one of the ones I would have thought of.
Right. Yeah, that's real. I remember the first time I watched my husband go through a breakup, and this was pretty early in our relationship, and it affected me so much in that like I'm still friends with the other person. I mean, they're still friends as well, but for some reason I had it like it was hitting my self-esteem and my security in the relationship of like, if he's so upset over this other person, then what did I do wrong? Mm-hmm. You know, like maybe, you know, like there's this kind of social idea that like, well, you still have your other partner, you should be fine. Mm-hmm. Right. Which isn't real, but I was also taking that on myself. Like, well, but you have me, why are you so sad?
Yeah.
Oh, that was hard.
It is hard. So what was helpful is that I was in two relationships. So I remember talking about it with my other partner and saying, he has 2 months of to be a shit storm and I don't care. So I was like, 2 months, I'm going to ignore what he says. So he would say things like, I'm never going to find love again. And, you know, it's just so sad. And I'm like, but I'm right here. What are you talking about? So for 2 months, I was like, yeah, you know, that must be so hard. And inside I'm like, what's wrong with you? But then, you know, afterwards, we can look back and even laugh about it. And yeah. Thank you so much for being so supportive in that time and just allowing someone to heal and recognize that what they're saying, when you're going through a breakup and all of your emotions are so sore, it hurts just as much, if not more, when you're poly than it does when you're monogamous, because it's like a different extra vulnerability. And it doesn't mean that they can't have those feelings. So I just had to let them. And it was probably easier because I said that out loud to other people. And I said, I don't even remember what words I used, but I'm just going to let them have the shit storm. I'm not going to take it personally. Like I expected it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Grief is a funny thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, lovely. Metamors, breakups. Oh, masculinity. That was the other thing. That is a thing that blows my mind too. Completely is all of the assumptions around, well, it must be a sex thing. Mm-hmm. and some ownership things. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, wait, what's going on here?
Yeah. And that's hard for me. You know, like even in where I live, you see me holding hands with someone and then another person and then people I just told them because I didn't want there to be a whole thing. And that's always the fear, someone judging, but the positives outweigh it. So it's hard. Like even this weekend, my partner, we normally stay actually in the room I'm in right now. In my house, I have a guest room, but my other partner's house, they don't have a guest room. So he just built a little tiny house. He literally built a house so that I could sleep over more often. Outside, so we're going to spend the weekend there and have a great time. The positives infinitely outweigh the negatives. And it's interesting because now, you know, my partners are friends, which it wasn't always like that. There was like an evolution. Mm-hmm. So I went traveling. I like to travel by myself. So I was traveling for a few months through South America. And this was during COVID. I actually, true story, got stuck in Antarctica for a few weeks because they closed the border of Argentina and they wouldn't let us, they wanted us to quarantine for 2 weeks before we entered back into the country, whatever. But when I hopped on the boat, COVID really wasn't a thing. And then when I was on the boat, the whole world changed and I had no idea, absolutely none. And that in itself was a pretty scary experience, but throughout it, I didn't even understand what was going on in the world, but my partner, my nesting partner, was understandably very anxious, had booked me about 12 flights to try to get home. It was a whole thing. I had to get a letter from like the Argentinian embassy, the American embassy. It was a whole experience. And through that, my partners became friends. So like, we got to get Sarah back. And then I remember my partner, Joseph was like, Sarah, things are different. We're friends now. He's like me. He's very social and he likes to be friends with everyone. So he was similar to me in that he was always trying. And then my nesting partner was always kind of like, okay, he's a nice guy, but I don't need to, you know, but then they became friends when I was stuck at the end of the world. So if you want your partners to be friends, just get stuck at the end of the world. You never know what'll happen.
Oh my God. That's wild. First of all, what were you doing in Antarctica?
I always wanted to go to every continent before I was 30. I'm 31. I haven't been to Australia. So okay, that's going to be the next trip, but I just love to travel and I love, and yeah, you know, what's interesting is that part of the reason that Polly worked so well for me, my nesting partner's relationship, was that he's very much so a homebody and I'm very much so explore the world, and he loves me where he wants me to have those experiences. So part of it was like, he's like, oh, I get the house to myself and you're going out, you know, like that was the idea. But in reality, you really can't put people in boxes. And so my partner Joseph has a kid, like he can't just take off and go to Antarctica. So I'm still solo traveling. And it's actually really difficult for my second partner. And I think it's really, I've noticed that as a trend in a lot of relationships, that when that other person is doing something, like maybe they're dating or they're doing something scary, they're going to travel by themselves, it's actually harder for that person. And I didn't, it was like, I want, part of the reason that I was interested in polyamory was this idea of, oh, when I'm gone, my nesting partner could be dating somebody else. And like they, you know, I felt like, oh, I don't want this person to be lonely. Like that was the whole idea. But now I just feel like I make more people feel lonely. I was like, that didn't work out exactly as I planned.
Yeah, that's real. It's like, I don't know of anybody who had, like, everybody has this idea of like the thing, the problems or the challenges that this will be the solution for, that this will solve. And then I think it rarely works out that way. Mm-hmm. It rarely works out to be the solution to a problem.
Yeah. That's 100% true. I would say it definitely was not a solution to a problem, but it has, I felt very supported by both of my partners with issues with the other partner. Like there's been so much growth. The positives have vastly outweighed the negatives for all the things. And people will say, you know, I think some people view polyamory as an orientation. And I do in a way, because I do think I've always been very open-minded. I've always been very, that just makes sense for me, especially once you know me. But at the same time, do I think I'm capable of being a monogamous relationship? Sure. Do I want to now that I've had this experience? No, this is a lot more fun and a lot more supportive. Like even after this, I'll probably go for a walk with my other partner and then watch a movie tonight with my other partner. It's just nice. It's nice to have more love, more people around. I sometimes babysit so that my other partners can, you know, husband and wife, those people can go on a date if they want to. It's just nice to have more support.
Yeah, that's so good. That's actually one of the questions I always ask people is if they think polyamory is an identity or a choice. And I think we all kind of have the consensus of everyone I've talked to is that it's like a spectrum, right? Mm-hmm. You just fall somewhere on the spectrum between monogamous and non-monogamous or polyamorous. Yeah. I was married monogamously for 13 years and I would not be monogamous again. I would not make that choice again.
I don't think I would either, because I don't think that person would be, we'd be missing all of the benefits of being able to have those difficult conversations, of being able to, there's so many benefits that I feel like we'd be missing out on by not having those experiences. Yeah. Do I think it's for everyone? Absolutely not. You know, it is difficult in some ways with, you know, now I have my own business, so I can do a podcast like this and talk about my lifestyle, but I have to be careful with what I say because one of my partners with their job, like could lose their job with certain things, especially living in Florida with all of the different, you know, there's judgments. It's not always the easiest thing to be vocal about, but the more that I've noticed I am, so many people are somewhere on the non-monogamy spectrum and just don't feel like they can talk about it or have words for it. They're like, oh, that makes a lot more sense. That's how I am, but I just didn't know what to call that, or I'm curious. And they'll ask me a lot of questions that sometimes I don't always love. Sometimes when you just say a part of yourself, like, this is who I am, people feel like it's a vulnerable thing. So they feel like they can ask you any question. And maybe I don't want to answer all of the questions, especially within my profession. I have, you know, there's some ethical concerns too, of always wanting to, of those things. So I choose what I want to share and what I don't want to share.
Absolutely.
But yeah, the positives outweigh the negatives.
100%. My husband and I have never been monogamous together, and we've been together 8 years, 9 years. It's 2023 now. 9 years. And I owned a salon, and, you know, as a professional in a small town, and was really worried about how people would, I don't know, judge me or whatever. And I remember just noticing that everybody that I would mention things to, like, even like clients of mine that I thought, oh, this is a very conservative person, I should probably watch what I say. And nope, like almost all of them were like, oh yeah, no, yeah, my best friend is doing this thing, or, oh yeah, my husband and I are open. Or it just, like, it always surprised me how accepting people were, and how much it was like, the more open I was, the more open people would be with me. And it surprised me. It always surprised me. And I love it. I love that.
Where do you live in the world?
I'm near Seattle.
So
I'm where the ferry goes.
Yeah. I do live in a really conservative area, so I wouldn't say that's always my experience, but it still is my experience more than not. And even among more conservative, like, people that would say that's not something that I agree with, but they see that I'm happy, like, they're respectful of my lifestyle, and that's been okay. But it was a huge piece of when I first started my business. You know, now I do sex counseling and pelvic floor therapy, but when I first started my business, I wanted it to be called Better Sex by Sarah, and I changed it because I've gone back to using it, but I changed it because I was way too scared to publicly talk about sexuality and not be authentic to who I was. Right now we haven't talked about sex at all, right? So it's not being authentic to your own sexuality is just being able to be who you are, even if society says different. And I was too afraid to say that, to say, here's who I am. And I didn't want to lie or omit the truth. You know, I didn't want to say, talk about relationships or sexuality and not be fully myself. And what was also hard is that my partners had to also want that. You know, you can't always share certain things if it's not within their comfort. So that was actually pretty hard. I ended up not doing the things I really wanted to do that now I am doing because I was too nervous about perceptions, mostly online, you know, what that would look like. So even doing something like this wasn't within my comfort zone not very long ago.
Yeah.
And even telling family, that was part of the reason I told my family, because I wanted to go down a venture in my own business. I'm like, do I want someone I really love, my dad, to find out about this person I've been with at this time was 5 years, to find out about this person because something really bad happened to me and I'm in the hospital, or from social media and something that I want to share because of my business? Like, is that how I really want them to find out? No. So that was what stemmed me to call and to start to share with people. And it was a lot easier than I thought. I really put it out of proportion in my brain.
Yeah. The way of fear.
And it feels so much better over here because, like I said, people already, part of it is when you're so scared about something and people are like, well, duh, we already knew. Like, look at me. I'm in rainbow glasses with a rainbow cloud behind me. It's like, they're like, yeah, Sarah, what's new?
You're clearly straight.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, okay, cool. Thank you for filling us in on the thing that we already knew about you. You're different. That's fine. Like, we love you anyway. So for a lot of people, really wasn't big news.
Yeah.
But it does feel so much better now to be, and I was nervous even about it with clients, like our certain clients. But now that I've there's so many places in which the LGBTQI community, in which anyone that's marginalized, non-monogamous, or in general just lives an alternative lifestyle, doesn't feel comfortable, or that isn't even a question. And especially within medicine, there's a lot of problems there. And so being a place where all different types of people feel comfortable, it even helps people that aren't in that lifestyle, because they're so much more comfortable to chat with me about their sexuality, about the things that they think are different, which aren't so different, you know? So being myself has really helped both professionally, personally, and it just feels good. It does.
Yeah.
But not everyone has that privilege or is safe to do that. And I recognize that. But I'm glad. I think mine was more of a perception of not being safe when I really was.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's really awesome. And it's really important that those of us who do have that privilege and are able to open up and be really authentic and open out in the world makes it so much easier for other people who don't have that, right? Mm-hmm. Like the more we normalize these weird lives we're living, the easier it is for other people.
And that's why I like that you're doing this as stories, because I think that helps. It's like when you hear stories. So I'm going to tell a quick story about a lasagna, because it's funny to me. I think it'll be funny to you. But when I was first dating my partner, Joseph, he really wanted my other partner to like him, you know, just like to just be like, okay, you know, just to feel that sense of security, like they don't hate me and that's okay. I could be around, whatever. So my nesting partner and I, we went away. I can't remember where we went. I think it was like away for Christmas or something. And on the way back, my partner has a sensitive stomach. He can't eat gluten. He can't eat dairy. It's like everything he can't eat. And my partner, Joseph, is like, it's like 6'4", has a beard. He looks very rough, but he's like the sweetest little like marshmallow kindest man ever. And so but grew up like with more Southern roots. So his family had given him like meat that they had like from hunting. And if you see this person, you'd be like, they're a hunter. If you talk to him, he's like, this is not something that person would do. So instead he wanted to make like an artsy lasagna. So he wanted to make a lasagna that my nesting partner could eat. So he told me like 6 different stores to get like gluten-free noodles, to get 3 different types of dairy-free cheese, to get the meat that was like, they killed the meat, they cleaned the meat. Like it was like hard to get this meat. He made this lasagna and left it in our fridge and we came home. And when I tell you, it was the most disgusting thing you've ever tried. It was so bad. I felt terrible. Like, I don't know if you've tried a mixture of 3 vegan cheeses with gluten-free noodles. It was so terrible. And I felt so bad because he's like, oh, how was it? Did he like it? I'm like, I don't lie. Like I said, one of my things, I just, I'm really not capable. I was like, no, but the thought was so nice. It felt so terrible. And we still laugh about this terrible, terrible, terrible lasagna.
Best thing I've ever heard.
It was so bad. But yeah. There's just like sweet stories. Like, well, to me, that's my humor, but like that, we have a lot of them.
Oh, I love that. It is. It's, talking about like metamors wanting to like each other or, you know, one wanting the other one to like them. I see that a lot. And I also have that a lot in my own life. Like, one of my partners and I have been together for 3 years and, one of my other partners was just like, meh. Fine. I don't want to hang out. So, but now we're like playing games together and doing things together. And, but it took a long time of just getting comfortable. Mm-hmm. I'm one of the ones who I think, I don't know, within a couple of months of dating my partner, I sent his wife's on a date together. I had gotten free tickets to a show, and I was like, do you guys want to go here? Go to this thing. And I've sent them gifts, and I was sent coffee, and just like, please. We're all very close now, but it's relatable.
Yeah, no, I could definitely relate to that. I've done a lot of those things, some in positive ways, some in negative ways, where I'm like, here's a million gifts. And they're like, why is this person giving me so many gifts? I'm just like me.
Yep. But yep.
No, now I have more of a policy where we can have open communication. That's good. Mm-hmm. And if we become friends, that's great. And if we don't, but we've tried a lot of things that weren't really working. Some that did. I remember I listened to a podcast about polyamory, and they talked about doing a poly check-in. So once a month we were trying this, we'd all get together. And the irony is that we weren't really all hanging out together just to have fun. It was like, we need to do this because I listened to it on a podcast. And my partner Joseph and I are similar in we like to talk about our feelings. And, you know, we go to a poly coffee where you talk about your feelings. It's really fun, actually. We actually all go. It's really wonderful that we have that resource. Because we can all chat with each other, and it's kind of like a support group for polyamorous people, and monogamous people go too, so that they can learn about relationships. It's actually awesome. But so can you help me? I lost my train of thought.
Yes. You were doing a monthly poly check-in.
Thank you. We were doing this poly check-in. And so my nesting partner and Joseph's nesting partner are very similar in that bed is not their thing. Like they don't like to... They both of them don't really like to get involved emotionally unless they know that person's going to be around. Like that's a lot of effort for them. Talking about their feelings is just like, I don't do this with people unless like, I just don't do this. You know, like that is, so we were trying it, and we still do it this periodically, but we'd have like a series of questions because I listened to it on a podcast. So this was a good idea. And then we realized, okay, this isn't maybe working. So we're not going to do this anymore. But we still just have open communication if there's a concern and something that we all need to talk about. I think it'd be different if we all like lived together, but.
Yeah. I think there is a big difference. I recently saw someone call it, it was online, and they were talking about like kitchen table poly, and you know, how everyone kind of has a different idea of what that is. And someone was like, no, we're barbecue poly. We're barbecue poly. Like we all occasionally. You know, at a barbecue or a birthday party or something, but we're not like hanging out every Tuesday and Thursday or whatever.
I love that. That's so funny. My partner that made the lasagna, he really wanted, again, he wanted my partner to like him the first few years. And so he would come over sometimes and like just help with things. It's also like his love language is he'll come and like do our dishes or something, you know? And so he's like, we made a joke one time. I was like, you're like a genie, like, you know, wiggle my nose and like, you just pop up and help with things. He's like, yeah, I'm like a mason jar genie.
I love that.
Yeah. It really made me laugh.
A little ribbon wrapped around it.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I love that.
I was just going to say that I think it's been much easier when we met people that were also living alternative lifestyles in some capacity. Yeah. And it normalized that so much. So all of these things just stopped being weird. It actually now feels strange for me not to be around lots of people that I can completely be myself around. Like it's the opposite. Now I feel almost a little uncomfortable if I'm not around people that I can just talk about myself or my date that I had with this person or this person, my sexuality or whatever. Yeah. Just a lot more fun that way.
Yeah. I do. I notice, I feel really awkward when I feel like I have to like put the mask back on. Like I've gotten used to not wearing it. So how about jealousy? Have you guys had to deal with much of that?
No, I'm just kidding. Of course. Yeah, you're lying. Jealousy.
What do I say?
I deal with jealousy, sadness, anger, frustration, pissed off, envy, like all of the feelings, of course. And everyone asks about jealousy And the thing with jealousy is that it does come up, but not for the things that you might think. Mm-hmm. So when my nesting partner was dating someone, I was jealous sometimes of, like I mentioned, he's like more of a homebody. I was like, you're going on an adventure without me? Because he has so much limited spoons for adventure. Yeah. I was like, you're going on an adventure. You know, it's like, that's, and then we'd have a conversation. He's like, you know what? You're right. I should be doing more of those things with you. And we'd do it. And it helps. Jealousy, I think, can be a catalyst to really positive change. Mm-hmm. If it's seen that way, you know, like this is making me jealous, like labeling it and the other person being receptive and saying, you know, I can see why you feel that way. Or just holding the emotion of, I've been there too. I feel that way sometimes too. I love you. And here's reassurance or whatever it is that you need. Yeah. We've all of us have made these mistakes in our relationship with not always handling jealousy in the best way. Or I know I have, we all have. So yeah, that definitely comes up, but it's not the emotion that's hard. You know, like everyone's afraid of the jealousy piece. So that's going to be like the hardest emotion in the whole wide world. And that one has been much easier to work on than some other things that might come up. Like, I don't know. It's not coming up to the top of my head, but other ones.
Sure.
Like maybe missing somebody. I feel like
it's something you get used to. Mm-hmm. Right? Like you get used to how it feels and then it's not a big scary thing anymore. So it's like, I'm experiencing this. What does that mean?
And you get used to what NRE looks like for someone, that new relationship energy. So you get used to the things, you know, now that I've seen my nesting partner be in two relationships, I know that they're more likely to have energy to go on and explore. I know what NRE looks like for them. And it's easier and easier to not take that personally, and instead to have some compersion and be excited for them. It still stings sometimes where I'm like, I've been asking for a year to go here. You know, you're going to Disney World, like whatever it is. Yeah. But overall, I don't know. I'm also very lucky in that both of my partners are better than me at communicating feelings. If anything, like they help me a lot with that. Neither of my partners have done anything that made me feel like we weren't all on the same team. Mm-hmm. I think that's really important. If everyone's on the same team, it really doesn't matter what emotions come up because you can all hold them. When you know, you can always tell when there's somebody that's just not on that team, maybe because they just don't know. They didn't realize, like, for example, you asked me if we always knew we were polyamorous. When I was 18 years old, I didn't even know how to be in a relationship. I was just excited that someone was flirting with me. You know what I mean? Like I was an ugly duckling kid. Like it wasn't something. I was just excited. You know, like, it wasn't a thought that
I'm going to do a thing. Like,
that would even be a possibility. And because we've known each other that long, he's excited for me to see me have that energy of like seeing another person think I'm beautiful the way that he does. And
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. They're actually so much better with the jealousy thing, if anything, than I am. Like they just love seeing me happy and very lucky. I've never felt like it's never been lashed out at me. You need to come home right now or blah, 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 blah. Like nothing like that has ever happened. We've had problems, but that hasn't been them.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. Let me ask you this. What is something that anybody can do for free that will help them approach relationships in a healthier way?
Ooh, relationships in a healthier way.
Or sex. So,
well, I talk about sex a lot because that's my job. I help people bridge that gap between pain and pleasure and then really focus on the pleasure piece and help health and wellness professionals with that. Yeah. So my brain did go there first. And one thing that I have two things.
Yeah.
So one is having sounding boards that aren't your partner's. So having normalizing the relationship that you're in by having other friends that are in those kinds of relationships and just getting to know them, you know, getting to know people. I'm lucky where I live that there's a Poly Coffee, but anything in that realm, even if it's online, is so helpful.
Yeah.
And then two, I like to view anything that's new and different in relationships and sexuality. There's this word that we use a lot in the kink community called lab time. Let's say you're learning a skill, like how to tie rope. Mm-hmm. You aren't just going to create this sensual, sexy experience. You're going to take lab time where you're just experimenting. Oh, how does this feel here? How does this feel here? Or maybe you read a book. You have somebody with you that's kind of making sure things are, oh, I would do it like this. And you're labbing, you're experimenting. It's science. It's fun. It's playful. What feels good? That's the whole idea. And looking at it, it's new. Not everything's going to feel good. You might not even like it. And looking at it as kind of labbing. And in a science experiment, like when you're labbing, there's still things you can do to make sure that there's not injury or harm to the people involved. Right. So if you're labbing and you're like, we are polyamorous and now you're going to go on a date. And this is where I see people make a lot of mistakes, which we luckily didn't do this. But, you know, they put up a lot of rules and walls. It's like there's a one penis policy and you can only be with another vulva, or there's a policy of, you know, all these like rules and walls that people will put up to try to protect their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that the best way to approach these things is to say, we're already breaking through the walls. Let's not put up more and more and more walls. It's okay to have boundaries and like experiment and play, but what can we do that's in the benefit of everyone? Because that other person is also like, people aren't always considering that person. They're only thinking about this unit. Mm-hmm. And that other person can get hurt as well if you're labbing with them and they don't know that that's what you're doing. Right? They don't know that this is an experiment. This is play. This is fun. Because there are people that are like, sure, you want to have a threesome for the first time and this is an experiment and new for you. Okay. Like that I'm signing up for, versus they're signing up for a date and a relationship and they're signing up for connection and emotional connection. And you haven't really talked about any of those things. That's when I think people get hurt. So consensual labbing.
Yes. I love that. I love using that, that term or that analogy for it. Cause it is, it's, I think there's this, thing that people do when they are monogamous and they're dating, which is I need to put my best foot forward. I need to sell myself. I need to be what these other people might be looking for, even if that's not really what I am. Mm-hmm. Right. And then when people are opening up relationships or trying things out, they kind of, a lot of times, do that same thing rather than just being upfront about what it is that they're looking for and what it is they're wanting to do and what they're hoping for, to find the people that match that.
Mm-hmm. Or to being open that they don't know, they're figuring it out. You know, that's okay too.
Yeah. This whole life is just an experiment.
That's true.
What are we even doing? Who knows?
That's true. And I would say, you know, it's just knowing that there's going to be things are going to be different than you expect. And that's okay. Yeah. So like oftentimes, and this didn't really come up with us today, but one of the main things people will ask me will have to do with the relationship escalator. You know, mm-hmm. how in monogamous relationships, it's really known that, okay, we're going to go on a date. Maybe we might go on a second date. We might go on an adventure together. We might get engaged, we might move in, we might have a baby. Like there's this like specific, we might meet the parents, whatever, escalator. And I see that still exists in polyamory. It just looks really different. Mm-hmm. So like telling my family about my relationship felt way up higher on the escalator than it might've been if we were monogamous. Mm-hmm. And so things are going to be different. Like you might be expecting, but as long as you're kind of expecting those changes, willing to have conversations and then looking at it as an experiment and how you can get better and better over time and creating connections with other people that are supporting you along the way and on soundboards and other people that aren't just your partners or in monogamous relationships as soundboards, because that's not a great idea.
Yeah.
I think that's the best advice.
Oh, I love it. That's so good. Is there anything that that I haven't asked you that you want to share with listeners?
I would like to share a little bit about, because I'm passionate about this area, about being, if you are a health and wellness provider, in serving the community in which you help, and some of the ethics. And there's the reason that I think a lot of people aren't open about their sexuality that have a job like mine is because they're worried about causing harm to themselves or others. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say how wonderful it's been to create spaces in which people can be themselves around me in the medical community, and how rare that is. Mm. So many people have felt very judged by the medical community for their body, for their sexuality, for being non-monogamous. I remember I went to see someone for a pap smear. I'd only even had two sexual partners my entire life. And I mentioned the fact that I had anal sex once, and then like put a pipe cleaner up my butt to like do an anal pap smear. And it was terrible. I was like, why is that necessary? Like, well, did we really need to put a pipe cleaner up my butt? So, and other people have really harmful stories of maybe that come more from judgment, or more from, you know, checking the box. You've had more than two sexual partners, you're this, and then they read it and they're feeling judged. So just the reducing the stigma. And if you do work in the health and wellness field and you want to help people in this space, it's my zone of genius, my passion. I would love to connect with you. Please do. I'll make sure you have my info. That's my passion, is really bridging that gap between having any discomfort or problem. I have like my own pelvic floor business, but really helping health and wellness professionals and coaches to help people with sexuality and to use all, like, this stuff only makes it better. Even we didn't talk very much about kink, but for me, that's such a big part of sexuality, and such a big part because it's just sensations, it's things that feel good. It's ways mm-hmm. to feel good in your body. And polyamory is just one example of feeling good in your relationship that's different, you know? And the more that we have other tools in our toolbox as health and wellness professionals, I think the more that we can help people to feel themselves and feel like we are a safe space to talk with and communicate with.
Yes. Yes. 100%. Absolutely. I love that.
It's going to be okay. You can be brave and you can do it. If to the health and wellness professionals listening, that's what I want to share.
Yes. 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 I love it. Let me think here. Oh, I'll put all your information in the show notes. I have one more question for you. And this is a segment that I hold aside for supporters of the show who on our Patreon. It's called Just the Tip. And this is, the question is, what is your best or favorite sex tip? I love it. Oh, how exciting. Thank you so much.
Sex is my favorite topic. So anytime that you want to talk about sexuality, and you know, it's interesting because I started helping people with pain. Like I was a pelvic pain, I still am a pelvic pain specialist with sexuality. And people don't realize that to become an OBGYN, to become a leading pelvic floor physical therapist in sexuality, to actually have classes on sexuality is not required. It's not part of it. It's all genitals. Mm-hmm. It's all the genitals and what could be going on with the genitals. And so I just love bridging those gaps, and it's, you're taking the absence of pain or this problem in your relationship is very different than the dartboard for pleasure and fun and all the things that you're wanting to experience. So anybody that's listening here, I think that they're already kind of looking into that pleasure dartboard and what that could look like authentically for them. So thank you for taking your time to do this. And for the people that are listening, I mean, your time is your most valuable resource on earth. And thank you for spending it with us.
Thank you. Oh, this is wonderful. Yeah. I could talk about sex and relationships all day long and how the genitals are connected to the whole rest of the body.
Yes, you're amazing. Thank you for putting this together, for helping the world the way that you do.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, you do such amazing work in the world, and I'm just so honored to be here.
I appreciate that.
Okay, that was Sarah Sohn. And if you want to hear her Just the Tip, favorite sex tip, go to patreon.com/notmonogamous and become one of our friends with benefits or one of our lovers and get that behind the scenes content. And also, if you become one of our lovers, that's the $25 Patreon membership support level. You'll also get a monthly call with me, a group Q&A coaching call where we just get on and chat about all the fucking things. Go check it out. Bye. Thank you so much for listening today. It would mean the world to me personally and would help us keep this little podcast going if you would subscribe, leave a review, or share this episode with your friends. For more personalized support with your own relationships, we can work together on a one-to-one basis. Just visit my website at aliciapayne.com and schedule a free call to chat about life, the universe, and your relationships. Bye.